Welcome to the Growing EBITDA podcast, where we unlock the doors to management and technology insights in the middle market. Join us as we explore innovative strategies to drive revenue and EBITDA growth, interviewing industry leaders and technology experts. Whether you're looking to streamline operations, understand the latest tech trends, or lead your company towards exponential growth, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and let's grow together.
All right. Welcome back in the studio. James, where's your studio today? Where are you dialing in from?
I'm calling in from Vegas today. So we're in a mobile studio, Mike, which is kind of nice. We're trying out this remoteness.
Vegas, what are you doing in Vegas?
So this week, it's going to be a bit dated when you listen to this podcast, but I'm at CES this week and kind of attending the CES for the purpose of hearing about all the great innovation. So one day you and I can have a podcast that we talk about it.
Cool. Great. And who do we have with us today?
Well, I think we have another James joining us today. I guess we'll ask James, where are you calling in from, James?
Hey, I'm calling in from Maryland after 10 inches of snow this week.
Mm. Excellent. Excellent. How'd they do with that driving in Maryland with 10 inches of snow?
Nothing. Just shut everything down. Don't go anywhere.
Good thing this episode's not about logistics.
lots of sledding. That's all you need.
Yeah. So James Bandy, what are we going to call our guest, James?
I think we're just going to call him.
We're going to be confused the whole time.
I think we got to show respect to our guest as the first official guest and go full name, James Lowe.
James Lowe. Mm-hmm. That work for you, James Lowe?
That works for James Lowe.
All right. Excellent. Well, James Lowe, thanks for joining James Bandy and I. James and I. We're excited to talk about all things warehouse. And really, specifically, when we were prepping for this episode with you, we wanted to dive into warehouse optimization, right? There's a lot of change that's been going on in fulfillment centers, in warehouses over the last 5, 10, 15 years. Probably a lot more changes to come with technology improvements. Maybe AI, maybe we'll get into that at some point. I'm sure you have some thoughts on that. But we're gonna do a deep dive, and we're actually gonna do this over a couple of part series. We think we're gonna do maybe two episodes on this and try and cover some ground. Really trying to unpack, how do you optimize warehouses? Where are some of the hidden costs? And how do you lay the foundation for making improvements? Today, we're gonna focus kind of on some of the more fundamentals and the costs associated with poor warehouse management, and kind of get into some of the business problems that people are experiencing that they're going to try to improve in the coming years, and maybe some tools and some best practices and insights that you have as a professional in the space that helps all different kinds of companies of different shapes and sizes optimize their operations. So hopefully we'll learn a little bit from you today, James, about improving efficiencies, reducing costs, meeting the ever-changing demands of the customer landscape, which if you're serving consumers versus industrial companies, you know, a lot of change on both fronts. I think a lot of people who are going to hear this think warehouses might go straight to thinking about companies like Amazon.com who serve predominantly consumers, but there's a big part of this landscape that is kind of more B2B in nature. So I'm sure we'd like to hear from you about some opportunities to improve those kinds of businesses too. So James, introduce yourself, give us some of your background, and let our listeners hear a little bit why about who you are, what you do, and why you're here today.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. So James Lowe, I'm a director at Trivista in our supply chain practice. Been around the firm for coming up on 13 years this year. So long time employee at the firm. Spent first couple of years of my life working in our continuous improvement group, doing process improvement work at various manufacturing sites and different businesses. Then transitioned over to our footprint and network group and spent a lot of years starting up and closing down and relocating facilities. And in the last couple of years, I've been focusing more on the supply chain side, whether that be sourcing, procurement, PSYOP, and then also the warehouse optimization piece of this. In my footprint experience, I actually started up a couple of distribution centers. So got a deep experience of from cradle to grave of designing a warehouse with GCs and landlords, what we can build in the building, working with clients on what should their racking layout be and how do they want to manage inventory in the building. So this is an area that I've personally seen that come from nothing to something, as well as gone into existing warehouses and spent a lot of time trying to help clients figure out how can they be more efficient and kind of treat the warehouse as an asset as opposed to just a building that they keep stuff in.
And James, so in all your travels, how many different companies do you think you've worked with over the last 13 different years?
I looked at the report a few months ago out of the system, and I think I was at over 150.
What's the most interesting business that you've seen out of those 150? Warehouse related or not, I'm just looking for, yeah. I'm looking for a fun one.
I mean, I think the one I go to is I spent 3 months at a marinara sauce factory. Spent the first month of that working in their cook room. They called it the kettle room because they cooked everything in these steam kettles. And I personally rewrote all of their recipes, essentially their SOPs and work instructions.
Did sales go down after that?
I don't think so. Hopefully not. I kept buying the product.
They let you change the recipe?
I tweaked it. I standardized the recipe. So
wait a second. After 3 months of working in that factory, you still had an appetite for marinara sauce?
That was going to be my question, Mike. Do you still eat marinara?
I took a break for a while. But no, I still promote the sauce and have very proud of that sauce.
Oh, you're sponsored by them still?
I wish. No, not anymore.
I wish.
They did ship me boxes of sauce back home whenever I was done working there.
I never got one of those boxes. You get one of those, James, Bandy?
No, I don't think I was around, unfortunately.
No. By the way, I got some pasta in the kitchen, James. Yep. Lowe. You just want to send me one of those. We'll be able to, we'll feed the kids tonight.
Hey, yeah. By the way, Mike, I think James is actually a chef. He sent Cindy the pasta. He should arrive at your home, run the recipe, and make it fresh for you in your home. So that's what I'm
hearing.
That's true.
That's true. We're going to have to do a whole series on the culinary adventures of Mr. Lowe here.
I'll just slip it a jar and you guys won't even notice I didn't make it from scratch, but it'll still taste good.
Yep. Oh, well, that's fun. So to get back on topic here, because I'm sure I could talk about pasta all day long. One of my favorite foods, that's for sure. But to get back on topic here, I found that I like doing this. I plug the topic that we're going to talk about into ChatGPT. Love ChatGPT. Quick shout out for those guys. And I asked them, How would it define warehouse optimization? So I'm going to read it to you. And it said, warehouse optimization is the process of strategically improving warehouse operations, spanning layout design, inventory management, labor utilization, and technology adoption to maximize efficiency and cost. And to put that a little bit more in layman's terms, it's really about making your warehouse run like a well-oiled machine. Right? Ensuring everything from inventory to labor works in perfect harmony with your business goals. Right? Is that, you think that's a fair characterization?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think another way of kind of putting a phrase on it is how do you make warehousing a core competency of your business, right? It's not just somewhere you store stuff. It can be a differentiator for your business if you leverage it appropriately.
Hmm. And do you mean that for businesses where distribution is the business, or do you think there's opportunity for companies that aren't pure play distributors?
I think both. I think it applies to both manufacturing and distribution businesses, because if you're able to improve your order accuracy, and whether that applies to both, a lot of the one of the key metrics we talk about all the time with clients is on time in full. And so making sure you're not damaging product, picking product accurately, shipping it at the right time, meeting deadlines. That applies to any business that has a physical product that they're shipping out.
So let's talk about who should care about this, right? I was kind of joking earlier, not joking per se, but I mentioned Amazon.com, right? I think a lot of people are going to hear warehouse optimization and they're going to think about businesses like Amazon, but who should listen to a podcast like this where we're talking about best practices around warehouse optimization and how to improve? You just attested to it's not just pure play distribution companies, right? It could be manufacturers too. But who else? As we all know, the three of us at least know, our listeners, if they're newer, might not. You know, we do a lot of work with standalone businesses, corporations, whether they're publicly or privately owned. We also do a lot of work with private equity backed businesses. Should private equity investors care about warehouse optimization, James? What do you think?
I think if you're going to spend the time to invest in racking and material handling equipment and have a potentially a decent chunk of labor force focused on this activity, it should be a key metric that you are monitoring and measuring on a daily basis to see how well you're running that side of the business.
If people start focusing on this and implementing some of the maybe suggestions that you'll share today, what's typical when you walk into a warehouse operation? What kind of improvements and benefits are you typically seeing through an initial walkthrough or through an initial assessment?
Yeah, I think jumping over to James Bandy's side of the world for a second, one of the changes we've noticed in the last decade has been the adoption of WMS systems. They've become a lot more accessible to much smaller, companies, smaller than the Amazons of the world. The challenge with that is it requires a change in process and behavior when you adopt that technology to ensure you're training your people to actually use the system efficiently. We've seen that during that technology adoption phase, you end up having to throw a lot of labor at the problem because you're not able to train and sustain the changes that you're trying to require of your business.
Let me just dive in real quick here. I'm going to talk about some of the key topics that we've asked you to talk about today, just to kind of tell folks what we're going to go into in a little bit more detail. And those include starting from the basics, like we said, the fundamentals. We're going to talk about an introduction to warehouse optimization, what it is and why it matters. We're going to talk about hidden costs of poor warehouse management, identifying and resolving bottlenecks, spend a little bit of time talking about optimization strategies, and then we're going to touch on technology, which you just touched on a second ago, James. We're going to touch on technology a little bit today and talk about how tools like AI and automation are starting to reshape warehouse operations in the 2020s and how that might be a little bit different than how they've been running in past decades. The next episode in the series, I think we're going to dive even deeper into technology. So if that's primarily what folks are trying to listen in for, stay tuned. But I'm going to pass it over now to Mr. Bandy and ask him to dive in here a little bit.
Yeah. James, you ready to be on the hot seat?
No. Yep.
So the first question that I had, which is interesting because, Mike, I didn't GPT it. I was going to ask our human here the same questions.
Well, you got to remember, I don't understand most things. So fair. If I don't have ChatGPT, helping me along the way, I'm not going to get very far in this life.
Yeah, and I didn't know a lot about this either. It's because I brought a friend, the other James, in this. I thought maybe a fun place to start, James, is baselining a little bit, right? What is warehouse optimization in your words? And then I think at the end of that, maybe we can chat a little bit about that. And then let's round it out by kind of the benefits. Because I think one of the things that we on the podcast always try to understand is establish what it is, and then how can I benefit from it or how can I improve? And that's really what we're here for. So let's turn over to you and give you some time to tell us in your own words, what is warehouse optimization?
It's a broad topic. It can cover, really every aspect and functional area of the business, regardless of whether you're a manufacturer or distributor. If you are receiving sales orders and fulfilling those from a location, it takes more than just people going and picking items off a shelf and putting it on a truck. So if you're thinking about warehouse optimization and all you want to do is try and reduce the headcount, reduce the complexity inside the four walls, you need to broaden that view and go and look at really your inputs, the sales and the procurement side of the business. How am I buying product and receiving it in that warehouse? How am I be converting it in a manufacturing business and then taking finished goods and exchanging those raw materials into finished goods into a finished goods storage facility? And then how quickly can I get a sales order processed in the front office and get that fulfilled by the warehouse team? And though all those pieces have to be in constant communication, you can't just run isolation and expect the two different sides of the wall, front office and the warehouse, to know what each side is doing without constant communication. ERP systems help with that, but there's obviously a lot of human error that can be involved there, and managing exceptions between the warehouse and the processes. So we typically walk into a warehouse project like this and we try to interview all the key stakeholders across the business. And it's not just, hey, show me how something moves in your facility. Like, yes, that's the most important part potentially, but it's how does the information and process flow between all the different functional areas. The secondary part of that becomes the physical side, right? There's the information side, then there's the physical side of movement. You know, we could go back to our Trivista fundamentals of lean manufacturing and lean processes. Movement is a form of waste. So how do we look at a facility and put the inventory in the right location that it can be picked quickly, efficiently, without damage? And how quickly can we get people to move that to a dock door or staging location to then get it on a truck? And really those combinations, you want to time is money, and to optimize that labor side of the piece, you need to get the layout side optimized as well as the information flow optimized. And if you're able to kind of combine those, you'll start to see significant improvement both on an OPEX cost side of the business, but also on the customer satisfaction side, because you're able to meet customer demands a lot quickly, and then become scalable. You know, you can then start to go out and push your sales team to sell more, drive top line growth, and understand the capacity in that warehouse to be able to go and push that market. You know, one of the things we get asked all the time is how many warehouses do I need in my network? And that's not a simple question to ask. You know, it could be due to market demands as far as lead time. You know, we've all seen the expectation in our personal lives that you order something off Amazon and it's here next day. That's not always the case for every market and every business, but there's a lot of companies that have expectation. If you order a part, you order some type of B2B item, you expect it to be in your facility within a week, right? And you've got to be able to meet that lead time and shrink it as quickly as possible. The other piece becomes working capital. If you're not able to understand where your inventory levels are, how quickly you're turning inventory, and how you optimize that, that can be a drag on the business, because you might have either slow moving products that you're not managing appropriately, or you might have excess inventory that's just taking up carrying cost and space in your warehouse that you could be using for products that actually might make you money quicker. So there's a lot of elements here that I think everybody in the business, from the sales side and the CEO's leadership to a CFO to a COO, you know, all three of those C-suites should have a strategic view of how does a warehouse drive and pull levers in their business.
James, one of the things that I think that's interesting is, you know, I came from large retailers, multinational retailers, a lot of warehousing. It was obviously a lifeblood coming from a distributor that also had warehousing. I think a lot of times when folks hear these type of programs, they think really large, arduous, multi-year, big programs. Can you maybe talk about kind of the scale of these projects? And is it always kind of this big? Because I think we've talked so far to this moment about these big programs. Are there potentially some smaller things that are done along the way that are still under that warehouse optimization?
The small projects, and I can give some examples, actually.
That'd be great.
Of things we've done with clients. We've recently worked on a consumer goods company in Pennsylvania, and they had a combination of a finished good distribution warehouse as well as a final assembly lines within that warehouse. So it's kind of, call it value add distribution, where they're not manufacturing the parts. They're outsourcing the actual injection molding and electronics, and all those things are all done overseas. They were bringing that all, landing it in the US, and then doing the final assembly and then boxing it and putting it into storage. And they called us going, hey, we don't know where our inventory is in the warehouse. We are struggling to supply product to the assembly lines so that when sales orders come in, we are just running around trying to find stuff to get it out the door. So we kind of had a double approach to that, which was, we'll come in and help you evaluate where should your inventory be stored in the racks themselves, because they were not utilizing the system to dictate and tell them that. So we put together a strategy of where should you be storing product and then dedicating pick locations, storage locations for that product. And then we set up, really more on the kind of process improvement CI side of the world, is line side bins and raw material storage locations, so that they could pull product as they needed it. And you set up a Kanban system where empty bin means somebody has to go and pick more product, and they are able to meet the demand and cycle times that they needed to achieve to get orders out on time. So, you know, those are relatively smaller projects. You know, we're not talking about redesigning a whole warehouse, opening a new warehouse. It's taking what you've already got and just putting the process and structure behind it. Another example on more of a pure distribution business is pick, pack, ship stations. That's a relatively simple project, but if you are not thinking about it in terms of lean manufacturing, you know, viewpoint, you're going to struggle with the whole flow and process of that, of line leveling, making sure if you're trying to put too much on the pickers versus what the packers can pack versus how do those boxes get staged by dock doors. You know, it's not as simple as just keep throwing labor at it. You've got to figure out how do I maximize that labor. And really, you start to think in warehouse terms. You think about pick lines. You know, it's not about how many orders can I get. It's how many items on an order do I want to go and pick as efficiently as possible? Because every line item, in theory, if you've got primary pick locations that are refilled appropriately, every line item is a stop on a track around a warehouse. And so you start to measure your warehouse employees based on how many lines are they able to pick per hour, per day. And that's how you start to drive efficiency improvements with very little other changes. It's just, hey, this is your goal. This is how many lines you have to pick. And setting up that fundamental concept is a, again, simple project, but can have huge impact on how you run your warehouse.
Those are great examples. I think the VAS side is always an interesting side to talk about. How do I align that and make sure I'm covered? I do also like the idea of thinking about, I have a very specific issue I'm trying to solve. I need to solve this issue before I solve my next. I think that's a good one. You answered a bit of my question, but my follow-up to that was going to be, how do I know when I'm done? Right? So I have the issue, I've done the improvement. When am I done?
The answer, honestly, is you're never done. It's as we do in most of Trivista's clients, it's a continuous improvement journey of always looking for that next step of improvement and maturity on the growth path of becoming an operationally sound business. There's always ways to go and chase. You know, it may be in different areas and you're going to kick it down to a different bottleneck at some point in the process, but you're never done in this journey. There's always something. And obviously, depending on your business, how it changes year to year and what products you're carrying, you may find that what you did last year may not apply because you've had to change your business model or what products you're offering to support. You might do an acquisition. You know, a lot of the times we get called in because they bought a business and they go, hey, how do we fit two different businesses with unique SKUs and profiles and completely different ways of picking the product even into the same warehouse? Because sometimes you're talking about case picking or each picking versus full pallet picks. And those are, you handle those completely different, even within the same four walls. So it's never done.
No, I agree with you. That was a bit of a tee up, a softball question there, because I think that is a fair answer. And the last one for this section, you talked about it a little bit earlier, but I do want to call it back because I think it's an important, because a lot of times when we hear the optimization side, warehouse optimization, we think finished goods, pick mods, goods to people, automation, all that type of stuff. You mentioned manufacturing, and I just want to go back and just kind of put a lens on kind of, and you don't have to spend the same amount of time if you don't want, but kind of that, what's the kind of projects you see in that and how am I done? And kind of that same lens, but for manufacturing, does it change at all? Am I thinking about optimization differently or is it essentially the same? It's just raw materials. Kind of what are your thoughts on warehouse optimization as it relates to manufacturers?
Usually doesn't change very much because it's more about segregation inside the same warehouse. You're typically not going to intermingle raw material and finished goods inside the same four walls. You're going to have dedicated either aisles or even just dedicated rack bays to raw materials. And there's the whole concept of a U-shaped cell, right? And it depends on, we can get into actual facility design and go down that tangent if you want. But whether you're doing a single loaded warehouse where your dock doors are all on one wall, whether you're doing cross docking, your flow is going to be dictated somewhat by the shape and size of the building. Your layout of racking is going to be dictated by dock door locations and column spacing and how you want to set that up. Whether you're got raw material or finished goods, you're probably going to want to segregate because you want to, again, think about the forms of waste. You want, if you're a manufacturer and you've got on-site manufacturing next to your warehouse, you want that raw material to be as close to the lines as possible, right? And you may receive that material differently than you ship finished goods. A lot of our clients, they'll receive, you know, think about metal fabrication for a second. You're going to receive metal fab off typically flatbed trucks that don't use dock doors. You have to either do side unloading or cranes, whereas the finished good might be on pallets and you can use a dock door and a forklift to get that on and off a truck. So you've got completely different styles of truck receiving versus truck loading. And so, yes, they are different, but you treat them the same way as far as the optimization approach and process approach. And what you probably want to tackle is, you know, set up different projects focused on those unique things. You can't, you know, you can't use the same solutions, but the same methodology and toolbook can be applied to both manufacturing raw material as well as packaged finished goods.
So James, let's switch gears here. We've talked a lot about kind of ways to improve already a little bit. Tell me about the hidden costs in businesses, right? Like, I'm sure a number of our listeners are going to be well-versed in warehouse optimization, but I'm sure there's also going to be a large contingent that is looking for advice on this matter. You know, how does somebody tell if they've got opportunities to improve? Where do these costs hide? Tell me about some of the inefficiencies that you see and how those inefficiencies are impacting people's bottom lines, whether or not they can see it themselves today.
This again is a broad topic because a warehouse, you have inventory. And so we could very easily start having a conversation about PSYOP side of the world of inventory planning and optimization without even thinking about the actual physical warehouse itself. It's the decisions you make on how much inventory should you carry. And so without even going into a warehouse, you can look at historical demand data and current inventory levels and tell a client, hey, you've got excess and obsolete or poor working capital utilization that you can improve. And that then translates into space utilization within the warehouse itself. Because if you, as a management team, you might look and say, I've got $15 million of inventory and not know that a third of it is excess. And if you're able to bleed some of that inventory off, you can now shrink your facility size from maybe down 25-30%, or use that space more effectively for other products, or even for more other manufacturing processes. And so, you know, there's the classic joke when you get a new building or you give somebody a bigger building in this world, that you give them extra space and they're going to fill it with something. You know, we've literally had clients put up fencing or bollards to stop employees from filling empty space, because otherwise you come back in 6 months after you've handed the keys of the building and you find just stuff stored there. And you're like, whoa, 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 this was penciled in for a future product line, a future acquisition. We've got a project right now that we're helping a client open a DC in Houston, and they currently outsource their e-com department, but they have plans over the next couple of years to bring that in-house, but they're not ready yet, right? They got to finish, they got to do their full pallet picks first, and then they want to phase in their e-com. And so we're setting aside 50,000 square feet of a 350,000 square foot warehouse for e-com. But we've already told them, like, hey, you're probably going to find a ton of pallets stored there on the floor because it's somewhere to stage something. It's somewhere just to, like, hey, we don't know where to put this. Let's just put it off to the side. So, you know, you think about warehousing and distribution businesses and even manufacturing, one of your biggest fixed costs is your lease cost of a building. And you want to sweat that asset that you're paying for on a monthly annual basis that you've signed up for 10 years, a 10-year lease on a warehouse. Typically, you know, sometimes you get down to 7-year leases, and you've got to make sure when you sign up for that you've got the right space. And that's a big area where we see some potential hidden cost is, hey, you're carrying too much fixed cost on your actual lease piece. The other piece becomes labor, right? Some businesses, depending on how they've got the financial setup, warehouse labor may or may not be in cost of goods sold and above the gross margin line. Some of it's going to be hidden in OPEX, SG&A below the line. And they kind of treat it as a fixed cost, and it's not, right? People effectively are a variable cost because you can use temps, you can maybe have to do some seasonal work, depending on what the seasonality of your business is. And so if you're not able to manage that human capacity side of the business, you're going to have margin erosion because you're carrying incremental payroll costs that you don't really need. And especially if it's hidden below the gross margin line, you're not truly understanding what your product line profitability is when it comes to your people cost. And that becomes a huge focus. Another fun one is maintenance. You know, you can go to a warehouse, both manufacturing or distribution businesses, and you'll see a lot of forklifts, a lot of material handling equipment. And when those break down and somebody cannot go and pull a pallet, move a product, load a truck because a piece of equipment is down and they're just waiting for a maintenance team to fix something, that's a huge hidden cost. And
I've never heard anybody say the words fun and maintenance in the same sentence before, but you did that nicely, James.
Hey, that's what I do. So I wish I had a comeback for you on that one.
There's room for that next episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
So James, tell me about the impact on the bottom line. So you talked about hidden costs, but give me order of magnitude. Like how impactful can these hidden costs be on a business or some of these inefficiencies be? What are you seeing out there?
I think typically if we're going into a business that really hasn't focused on this, you're looking at an opportunity of 10 to 20% reduction of pure warehouse cost. You know, whether it's labor, whether it's just getting more product out more quickly, be able to fill orders more quickly, you're able to drive that improvement to the bottom line. And then it becomes a question of, can you scale that with your sales team, right? If you've got more capacity identified, it can be a compounding effect of top line growth because now you can meet more demand.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a huge opportunity there. If you focus on driving that cost down within a warehouse, you can be more efficient from a pure OPEX perspective, but then you can also unlock capacity that you didn't even realize was there.
So what's the first thing you're looking for? You go out to a new site, never been there before. What are you looking for? You do a walkthrough, 30 minutes, hour. What questions are you asking? What are you looking for? What are some of the telltale signs that there are either $100 bills lying on the floor waiting for somebody to pick them up, or whether the processes can be optimized or the throughput can be expanded or on time and full, as you mentioned, could be meaningfully improved? What are some of the first two or three or four things that you're looking for?
Visually, a huge indicator of a poorly managed warehouse is dust. And it sounds silly, right? But if you walk through a warehouse and you're looking at product on racks, on shelves, and it's got a lot of dust sitting on it, you know immediately that inventory hasn't moved in a long time. And
so avoid the dusty marinara sauce. Yes. James Bandy. That's what I learned on today's podcast.
That's the secret. That's the secret ingredient, though, that I added for you. That's what makes it so good. So it's a silly one, right? But it's a visual check, which you can figure that out.
I like it.
Walk in 5 seconds into a warehouse, you go, hey, how much dust is sitting on this product? Now, obviously, there's some manufacturing companies that create dust because of their manufacturing process. So, you know, it's not a 100% rule, but for generally, if you've got a demise building that inventory is kept separately, it shouldn't be that dusty. But that's a big one. And that starts to go down the path of both, how am I managing my inventory? How are people picking it? You know, am I following a FIFO practice of first in, first out, and making sure I'm taking the older aging inventory before I pull stuff that I just received? And it also goes back to the PSYOP discussion of, am I carrying too much? Do I have excess and obsolete that I need to take care of? So that's one. The other one is, go walk the process with a warehouse associate or operator, right? Go and ask them, hey, how do you know what to pick next? And if they can quickly show you, hopefully on a electronic device, like a tablet or a scan gun, that, oh, these are my pick tasks, this is what I'm working on next, you'll figure out, are they getting the information they need to be efficient? And if you ask them, okay, great, how do you find that product? That's the next question to ask. How do you go and find product? If the answer to that is, I have to drive around a bunch and look, that's an immediate red flag. If you are wasting time by driving up and down aisles looking for product, trying to identify it, because it's either not marked correctly, it's not in the right location that the system thinks it's in, or the system's just wrong, then you very quickly start, again, throwing dollars, you know, back to your reference of $100 bills. You're throwing $100 bills out the door, just having people drive around on forklifts. So that's a huge, huge red flag. The next one is damage. Right? If you start to see a lot of scrap in warehouses, whether that be packaging materials, whether that's raw materials, that's finished goods. If there's a large scrap department and how you get rid of that, that is just pure margin hit because you're throwing away product that you've spent a lot of money on to hold, and now you're disposing of it, which most of the time you're not getting any money back on that, right? In some cases, depending on what the product is, let's say if it's some type of commodity and there's some recycling opportunity there, sure, you might get a few pennies on the dollar. But for the most part, anything your employees damage in your warehouse is just a pure loss. And that's a red flag as well if you start to see that. Because that means there isn't a culture of caring, right, about the product. How are you training your employees to pick it up with a forklift, put it down with a forklift, put it on a truck? And then it becomes a question of customer satisfaction of escapes. You know, one of the biggest things from a warehouse distribution perspective, and this applies to both manufacturing as well, is how do you prevent your customer from being impacted by those bad practices? So very quickly and easily in a 15-20 minute walk around a warehouse facility, if you can visually see those things and ask an operator, how do they know what to work on next and how do they know what their goal is? That very quickly tells you whether or not you need to go a little deeper.
That's all I got for you, Mr. Bandy.
Well, that was some good insights there. I think there was a couple, the dusty learning, the part that was funny too, but like, that's one of those that I always enjoy. And for me, that equivalent is when I go to a DC and I go see a pile of paper on the back bay doors, right? Like, I know you're not using the system because you got this pile of paper. Why the heck isn't it in the system already? Either A, you're not leveraging a system that will allow you to fully automate, or B, you're so backed up that you can't code it in. So, you know, I think that's interesting is now we've gone through kind of the what it is, some of the value of it financially and some of the other components. I think a lot of our listeners are business folks and sit at these businesses and they may be thinking to themselves, gee, there's a lot of great information. Seems like James is really knowledgeable. I wonder how knowledgeable and how well my organization's working, right? Like, I think that's one of the things we always do when we hear something is we kind of bring it internal. So if I'm trying to understand my maturity level and I'm a business operator, what are some things or how do I think or how can I go investigate my maturity level and do a little of my own sleuthing and research to know where I am on that continuum that we discussed?
So the way we approach that is with an initial assessment. And interestingly enough, you can combine both the technology side of the world and the business process human side of that into a single assessment. And Travis has got experience of being asked to come in from both angles, where a client goes, hey, I don't think I'm using the technology right. Can you come look at it? And while you're looking at it, you know, take a look at how my operators are operating. And then from the flip side, I know I've got a bad operation here. I know I've got an inefficient warehouse. Can you also just check if I'm using the system correctly? And so it can go either way, right? Either way is an entry point into this discussion. And what we like to do is go in and use our toolkit of process maps and value stream mapping to understand how everything's linked together in the business. And so, as we said at the beginning, you've got this need for information to come from sales and procurement that has to feed that warehouse to make sure they know what's coming in and what should be going out. And that process needs to be tightly linked together. And then you've actually got the goal and process management of the people on the floor. And are they able to go and drive to accomplish the goals that are set for them on a daily basis? And so looking at that process, looking at the data that's available, and obviously every client's got a different level of maturity and quality of integrity of data. But if we can look at what's in inventory, how quickly is it turning, and start to stratify that into various segments. You know, we haven't even started to talk yet about ABC inventory analysis, right? Which is a huge topic in and of itself. But if you start to think about your warehouse in the different segments that you have to serve, whether that be product lines, whether that be the ABC moves, whether it be for raw material and finished goods, you start to break that down into digestible chunks. As we do, we start to put plans together on how do we improve those, because not each one of those different segmentations needs the same approach. You might have different approaches across the facility. And so what we try to do is we try to build a list of projects that will have meaningful impact into the business. And then on the technology side, which is really fun these days, is start to work on system configuration and capability, are you paying for a WMS system that you might only be using 10% of the capability? And how do we start to increase that utilization? Because you're spending a lot of money on license cost and not getting the value out of it. And so we try and look at it from that perspective as well. So they're heavily linked. You want to use the technology to enable yourself to manage the business and have that data and insight and not be flying blind. From there, figuring out what else you need, you look at people. You know, people becomes a huge component of this. And do you have the right skill set, the right leadership, the right structure? Depending on how many shifts you're running in your warehouse, you know, that can impact you heavily. You know, if you're a type of business that is reliant on external logistics companies to pick up product, you're kind of somewhat at the mercy of their schedule, right? You're going to be told, hey, this truck's coming today. We're going to be delivering at 8 o'clock and you've got to assign a dock door to it. And your pickup's happening at 2 p.m. because that's when the driver's available. That's when the truck's available. So you've got to manage your actual receiving and unloading process around a schedule that you may have very little input on. And so there's the whole truck side of things that we haven't even really gotten into yet. From there, you know, from a people perspective, it's leadership and managing metrics. As with anything, you only can improve what you measure. If you don't have a baseline, you don't know what you're starting with, you don't know what your goals are, and your leaders aren't able to hold their teams accountable to those goals, then you don't stand a chance really of improving things. And we have to always go in and either see if that baseline exists, or a lot of times, you know, we've worked with a bunch of companies over the years that we've had to put that baseline in to even be able to start improving. And we go, hey, it's process deployment. It's not even process improvement at this stage of your maturity curve. And so that becomes a good way of seeing if there's opportunity or not when it comes to improving the warehouse.
Yeah, and I really like the comment around KPIs. Here on the podcast, we're big on data-driven decision-making. And I think looking at those KPIs and having something to hitch to is pretty good. I'm going to put you on the spot, and this is not something we prepped for, but I think it's a fun one because I'm going to go back to the dust thing. So we talked about, you know, I'm talking to my team, and I think some of these things are outputs that you discussed and some of those. But if I had to ask one question of an operator, of a warehouse operator, and by that one question I could derive where they were on the continuum, what would be a good question to ask and say, hey, blank, 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 blank. And then they can take that answer and come to you and say, here's what I heard. And you can kind of help them understand where they are. We're going for the deep questions on this cast now. Yeah. We're not keeping it surface level. We're stepping outside your comfort zone. I like it.
Yeah, I think, you know, working with the frontline personnel is always the most valuable in these situations because they know the job, right? It's one thing to talk to a COO or a general manager or a warehouse manager, but the people who actually pick up the product and put it down on a truck, they are the ones that truly know what the pain points and issues are. And I think the question you can kind of rely on to ask is, do you have all the information and tools you need to be successful? Mm. Yeah. And if they are able to proudly say, like, yes, I know what I should be picking, where it is, and where to put it, if they can confidently answer that question, then you've probably got a pretty good operation. If they tell you, turn around and say, yes, I know where my inventory is, but my forklift breaks down every other week, pretty good indication of what your problems are. If they turn around and say, I don't even have the right tool for the job, or, you know, you start to see them duct taping things in the warehouse, it's all those signs. So going straight to the front lines and asking them, do you have the information and tools to be successful, would probably be the question to start with.
I like it. That's a great perspective. I used to work with a guy that we'd go to warehouses all the time, right? And his question was, what's the last thing you improved? And I think that really doesn't get you as deep as your question, because everyone's going to have something the last thing improved. Like at the house, I am always answering my improvements. I don't really like to focus on the things I'm not doing well. That's a good perspective. I like that, going to the front line. I think that's one of the things that I also, when I joined Trivista, which, by the way, everyone, I hit my 5-year anniversary, so I don't have the tenure that you two fine folks have, but just hit my 5. But I think one of the things I respect about the firm is we go out, get on the floor, and have those conversations. I think you prove that just in your answer there. So I respect that answer. I'm on my path of wanting to be the best in the industry, and I'm on my growth path, and I'm working my way through it. Now I have some understanding. I understand financial implications. I've talked to the team where I'm at. Kind of like on that path to excellence, like what are some of the, how would you kind of bucketize that path in? It's like I'm new, or I'm along the way, or I'm immature. Like how do you kind of articulate where somebody is in that? Because I think understanding and being able to have those conversations, let's say at board level, could then kind of drive the need to maybe reach out to a group like us and say, we need help. How do I kind of talk about where I am on the journey and then express that to business folks so I can go get help to move up the curve?
And if you could also define bucketize for me and maybe everybody else who ever listens to this, that would be helpful too, Mr. Lowe.
By the way,
Mr. Bandy, is that a technical term, bucketize?
I believe so. The bucketization of information. And I'm going
to bucketization.
I'm going to bucket your question to the side and let Dave talk about that continuation. besides, how do you group? Sorry, let me be more proper. How do you group those things and how do I articulate that?
Yeah, the buckets I would use are definitely around for most of our clients these days, it's about how they introduce technology into the warehouse. And, you know, you go back before most of our clients were using sophisticated ERP WMS systems and everything was paper. Everything was, you get a pick ticket, you go and find the product manually, you take it to a staging area and you put it on a truck and you're handing manifests over, you're handing pick tickets over, everything's being signed off completely by human hands on pencil to paper. The other end of the spectrum becomes full automation, right? We can use the Amazon reference where very little humans actually walk around that facility. It's a lot of robotics, a lot of automation and barcode scanning, RFID. You know, that's very few companies are actually at that level of maturity. So you've got the kind of the whole spectrum there. And there's, I don't know how many milestones you could put between the two. There's probably a lot, but the buckets in that, you know, that you can kind of think about as our one of our clients is, let's say you want to get to some of the industry best practices of barcodes. You know, barcodes is a simple one. If you're able to reduce the manual input of SKUs, PO numbers, sales order numbers, any of that information can be barcoded, immediate improvement, because you take out human error of fat fingering data into a system and you speed up the process of identifying, is this the right location? Is it the right product? Am I putting it in the right place? And so if you're able to go in a warehouse and see barcodes pretty prolifically across the facility, whether that be bin locations, staging locations, on the product itself, that's a pretty good milestone to try and go for, is that barcoding piece. The next one's going to be around kind of the actual handheld systems that employees are using. Again, the paper to electronic transition of am I being told what to do because my manager physically comes and hands me a piece of paper, or am I being told what to do because the computer system is able to do directed picking, directed put away, and I can just follow essentially what the system is telling me to do because it's got enough logic built into it that it can kind of guide me and be like somewhat of a manager itself, right? And the managers end up then just managing by exception. They don't have to go and babysit and make sure all the employees are picking the right stuff at the right time. The next kind of step in that curve, some of the best practices we like to see is on the more on the inventory management side. So I kind of use the phrase there, directed picking, directed put away, is do you have a business that, again, the system is driving you to best utilize all your pallet locations? Because if you're a business that has dedicated primary pick locations, you usually have overflow inventory, excess inventory that is overstock that you're going to be pulling from. And so the system should be able to tell you like, hey, this bin's getting empty. Material handler person, you go grab a pallet of it and bring it to the primary pick location so that the pickers don't have to travel 2, 3, 4 times as much to go pick it from the overstock location. So that's another kind of gating item. The other piece that we've seen a lot more get introduced in is license plates. Actually being able to monitor discrete pieces of inventory because you're giving them a unique ID number inside the system versus a lot of times, you know, if you're doing a basic WMS implementation and running a warehouse that way, you are simply telling it, hey, I got another pallet of SKU X and it's 1,000 pieces. I already have 1,000 pieces. Now there's 2,000. but I don't know which one's older, which one's newer. I don't know where the new one is. I don't know where the old one is. Whereas if you're giving it a unique warehouse license plate number and you tell it, hey, license plate Y is in that location, it can now start to handle that inventory churn and turnover that you want. And especially if you're doing bulk picking versus piece picking, and you know you've got a full pallet of something, and a customer orders a full pallet's worth of product, you now don't have to go and build a pallet of that based on multiple boxes. You can go and just pull that full pallet because the system knows it exists. It knows how much is on it. So that's another kind of big step. Then you start to get into some of the more automation, cobot, semi-automation, whatever phrase you want to use. And that's a big step. That's a pretty big step for our clients because it's a trade-off of labor cost versus a significant investment, because it's not just buying a robot, right? It's buying the systems to operate and optimize that robot, and then having a support staff in the background who can run it for you, because now you're going from relatively entry-level warehouse employees to pretty sophisticated engineers from a salary comp perspective to go and operate those robots. So it's not as simple as, hey, I'm just going to buy a robot and throw it in the warehouse. And so we've implemented those. We've worked with a couple vendors to put those in place. But the volume you have to be driving through a warehouse to justify that is pretty high, as well as it needs to be product that can be handled by that robot. So a lot of, for our clients, industrial type clients, the product's too heavy for robots anyway. So you physically, the robot physically can't even move it because it needs to have the weight capacity of a forklift, and you know it's not going to happen. Actually, I will go back. There's one cool thing you can do that, again, it depends on the product and your business, is wire-guided forklifts. So you can, you know, you start to think about capacity and optimization of a warehouse. You want to fit as much in as possible, but in order to do that, you need to make the aisle widths as narrow as possible. And so you can get into a whole rabbit hole here of material handling equipment opportunities to improve. And if you're able to do wire-guided forklifts, and you know you're no longer worried about human error of crashing into an upright of your racks and knocking the whole building down, that's a pretty cool step to get to. It's expensive. Again, you think about the payback period of going to that level of sophistication. But if you've got the right product mix and the right pick profiles to support that, it's a worthwhile endeavor. You know, I've seen it. One of the examples I've seen it best used was a manufacturing facility that had a lot of jigs and fixtures for all their products. It was a metal fab facility, so heavy jigs, heavy fixtures that they used to put steel pieces in to stage everything right and weld it all up. And they had, I don't know, a couple thousand jigs and fixtures. So the question becomes: is how do I quickly pick those, put those away, and get them to the welders? Because at the end of the day, the welders are the most expensive labor part of that business. So I need to be able to get them their fixtures. I can't have welders walking around going to find those. And so they put in a wire guided, it was only like three aisles of racking, but this one person just all day just drove up and down those aisles on a wire guided system, picking and pulling jigs and fixtures. So again, that's not even a finished good we're talking about. It's not even a raw material we're talking about. We're literally talking about something that is used in the process itself that the customer doesn't see that as a value add of how do I get my jigs and fixtures. But the business realized, hey, this is a huge cost for us. And so that's a complete different angle on how do you go after warehouse optimization.
No, I really appreciate that. And I think those are some very visual things that our listeners can go out to their own warehouse and see pretty easy. The other thing I loved is there's a lot of tech in those answers. So the next episode, I'm pretty excited for. There's going to be some good conversation. It's interesting. You made me think about, so I am at a conference here right now, like we discussed at the top of the call, but NVIDIA yesterday announced, and I'm not sure if anybody saw it, but their CEO came out and said that IT departments will become like HR departments in support of systems. And the idea being is no longer you're going to be build and create and run, it's more support and be around. And so you called out, which I think is an interesting call out, is as you add these systems, there is a support mechanism or a support team that goes behind it. It's not just the folks on the floor. You add cost of ongoing maintenance. I think all of us, you know, when you initially buy that vehicle and then you continue those years of maintenance, it's there and those systems aren't. So I think that's a pretty interesting call out for some of our folks on the line is, and I think I'm sure you do a lot of the financial analysis of my upfront cost versus my ongoing cost versus doing it the way I do. It's a great call out. And the other part of being at the conference, it's interesting you say that. So I walked by the industrial section. It had goods to people, pallet robots, full automation, RFI with hyper awareness down to a single inch. All these things are kind of driving some of those. And I think it's interesting that you say that's high on the maturity curve, because if you see these guys, they're selling you, it's like everyone's doing it. But the CapEx is extreme to get there. It's not really something that a lot of folks are doing. It's still kind of that bleeding, leading edge. And so I appreciate that. My last question before I kick it back to you, Mike. I know, James, beginning of your career, we probably focused more on PE. Over time, I know that Trivista has changed, and now we're not just only PE focused. We have a bunch of other folks in the middle market. But I'd be remiss with all your years of experience to not ask, if you put on your PE hat for warehouse optimization as a PE operating partner, as a PE leadership team, or even as a PE group, why should I be interested in warehouse optimization? Why are PE folks and PE companies interested in this? And why do we get engaged and get calls to go to their port coast to do some of the very things you discussed? Maybe just close us on kind of a PE lens.
A lot of the times private equity calls us because things have started to get form poorly when it comes to the KPIs. We talked briefly about on time in full. OTIF is a huge metric. Customer satisfaction is a huge metric. And so if a private equity firm senses that warehouses are struggling to meet the demand and customers are dissatisfied and they start to see that softening of the top line, it becomes pretty obvious that who's the customer touching. And it's a lot of times the last person to touch your product is a warehouse employee. And so you start kind of from the customer backwards of why is that experience bad? And that can become a huge issue to try and fix for, you know, when you go to sell the business. If you're doing due diligence and you've got somebody walking through your warehouse and they see the things, you know, we sometimes see when we walk around, and the warehouse becomes a huge risk on that transaction, then you want that warehouse to be as clean and organized and as safe as possible, because that can become a huge, huge risk for a private equity firm, whether that be a manufacturing site or a distribution site. Obviously, if it's distribution, all the focus is on that. But as a manufacturing site, you know, it should also be a huge differentiator.
Well, James Lowe, thank you very much. Great having you. Appreciate your thoughts on warehouse optimization and helping everybody understand not just a buzzword, really kind of a means of competitive advantage if you can get it done right, if we all understood everything that you shared with us today. You know, my key takeaways were: start by assessing where you stand today. And in the next episode, we'll dive deeper into fixing some of those bottlenecks, leveraging technology to do it, and building data-driven efficiency. So don't miss it, everyone. We'll talk to you soon. And again, Mr. Lowe, thank you very much. And we look forward to chatting with you again in the near future. Thanks for tuning into this episode of Growing EBITDA. If you like this episode, hit subscribe or follow us on LinkedIn for updates. Got a topic you'd like us to cover? Drop us a message. We'd love to hear from you.